building a business is very iterative and you make a ton of mistakes. And you're going to make tons of mistakes whether you have the right people or not. But if you have the wrong people, then those mistakes are really problematic. If you have the right people, then you make the mistakes, you rise up as a team, you learn from it, and you keep on going.
Hey, it's Adam Schoenfeld. Welcome back to the Built in Seattle podcast, where Seattle's top entrepreneurs, investors, and leaders share their stories and their lessons from behind the scenes. If you like this show, then you'll love my short weekly email, the Pike Street Journal. Subscribe at psj.email. Each week I send some bonus nuggets from these interviews, stuff I get when the recorder's off, and some more insider takes on Seattle people and companies. That's psj.email. My guest today is Kelly Breslin Wright. She was the EVP of sales at Tableau. She was there from the very beginning, and in 12 years, she went from zero to $850 million in revenue. They were later acquired by Salesforce for $15.9 billion. Kelly's now a board director and advisor to public and private companies like Fastly, Lucid, and Amperity, and she's a member of the faculty at University of Washington. She talked about building mission and values that actually work, the missionary sale, and the balance between big thinking and daily results. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Kelly. I'm here with the one, the only, Kelly Breslin Wright. Hey, Kelly. Good to have you here.
Hi, Adam. It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start by talking about your time at Tableau. Looking back, what was the most rewarding part of that journey?
There were so many parts that were just really incredible about the journey at Tableau. But when I think back on it, there's just one thing that pops up way more than any other, and it's really all about the people. And everything that we do is about our people, the people and relationships. But I just have great pride in the team that we built at Tableau and how we together were able to build this company and build everything that we did, because we wouldn't have been able to do it if it wasn't for the people and the team. So it was super rewarding to be on this journey with this incredible group of other human beings that were really passionate about what we're doing. And it continues to give back all the time. Like, it's not just about what we built and what we did when I was there. It's about those relationships and those ties that we still have. And it's also just fills me with pride to be able to see all the amazing things that people are continuing to do, whether they're at Tableau or somewhere else. I mean, people really built their career and their not only career relationships, but lifelong friendships there. And it's just the gift that keeps on giving, the people that we had as part of the Tableau family.
How much of that did you forecast from the beginning that it would have been all about the people, that your answer now would have been that the people and the relationships were the long-term reward that paid off?
That's a great question, because I think early on in my career, I think many people early on in the career, they know people and culture and team is all super important, but did I really recognize and acknowledge that was what it was all about? And people are always talking about all the operational tweaks you need to do and the processes and how can you be more productive and more efficient? And those are all critically important. But in the end, it's people that are actually making all those things happen. Building a business is very iterative and you make a ton of mistakes. And you're going to make tons of mistakes whether you have the right people or not. But if you have the wrong people, then those mistakes are really problematic. If you have the right people, then you make the mistakes, you rise up as a team, you learn from it, and you keep on going. And so now hindsight is so super clear that everything that every company should do, and this is always central to how I advise companies day in, day out. I think people that know me get sick of hearing about, it's all about the people. But it is really all about the people. People are what makes the world go round. People are who build companies. People build the products. People sell the products. people engage with your customers, people manage other people, hire your team. And if you have the right people, it will make amazing things happen.
I've fallen into this trap so many times of getting obsessed with the puzzle or the problem and not focusing enough on the people. You have this hindsight of looking back on a long journey in a successful company where the team was together a long time. What do you think leaders can do tactically to keep that top of mind or have that mindset early on without having to just live it and experience it being the root cause of success?
Well, there's a lot of talk now about core values and companies' core values. And many companies take that really seriously. And then other companies believe, or other leaders might believe, it's the touchy-feely stuff. And people are have these words and they put the words on the wall and they don't really mean anything. And that's just, it's not true. If people put the words on the wall and it doesn't do anything and no one enforces it, then of course, it why pay attention to it? But they actually do really make a difference. And I think companies need to think, what are the values that are really important to them? What are some of the fundamental reasons that they exist in the first place? And this comes back to mission and vision too, but let's stay on core values for a moment. If you understand what is important in how you want to engage with your customers, how do you want your team to be built in terms of those values of how employees and the team interact with each other, and then how you're going to actually create this workplace where you can shine in the workplace, and then that workplace can be reflected with your customers, you need to be really intentional about it. And at Tableau, this was one thing that the whole team collectively did together really well. We had core values from the onset. The values were, we were on a mission. We were very mission driven. Not all companies are very mission driven, but everyone should have a mission. We said that we built great products. We used those products. We work as a team. We respect each other. We're honest. We delight our customers. And then there are other values and leadership values as well. But then when we were hiring people who believed and lived their life and did their work according to those values. So each company might have different values because each company has different personalities, just like each person has a different personality. And so it used to be people would talk about cultural fit. I think that those terms have evolved a bit because cultural fit is, if you're all really fitting to how that company's culture is today, how is the company going to evolve and grow? Because the culture shouldn't be the same when you have 1,000 employees or 10,000 employees as when you had 15 employees. It should evolve. But you do want people to be able to have those same values so that they can add to the culture. They can be culturally additive, culturally enhancing by having those same fundamental beliefs. Because at Tableau, we talked about, we respect each other. We're honest. We didn't want people that had big egos. And there are a lot of people that had big egos. They're maybe not the most ethical. I don't know why any company would want those people. But at Tableau, they just wouldn't have been able to thrive. And so by having people that aligned with those values, we were able to create a really cohesive team where everyone respected each other. Everyone trusted each other. Everyone wanted to do their best every day to really go build something meaningful and impactful.
I love that. What are some of the things that you think Tableau did particularly well in making it more than words on the wall and actually have it permeate the culture in the way that you described so that it would show up in the interview process and would show up in how people were interacting with one another and with customers? Were there little tactical choices that had a big impact or had a lot of leverage in making that happen?
Yeah, Adam, definitely. It has to be really intentional. A lot of companies, they think about it, but then they don't do anything to actually make it happen. So let's go through. I could talk about a long list of tactics, but just to put some out there, so maybe this makes it more actionable for people who are listening. One is everyone needs to be practicing what you preach. So if you're going to be talking about, for instance, we used our own products at Tableau. We built great products. We used the products. So you want to make sure that you're hiring people who will be using the products, because that's part of the way that we were able to further our mission of we help people see and understand data by making a product where everyone could use it. If we weren't using it and we're selling it to our customers or building it for our customers and we're not using it ourselves, how are we going to even understand their pain? Not every product or every software company or every company that has whatever product or widget can do that, but at Tableau, we could. And so, for instance, on the sales team, by the time I left, there were almost 1,800 people on my team, and virtually everyone, certainly everyone that carried a bag or managed people with the bag, part of the interview process was they had to demo the product. And people thought that was crazy, because sometimes people would say, I have a job already. I'm not going to spend hours to go learn Tableau and demo Tableau before I even join your company. Hire me, give me a job, and then I'll learn the product and demo it. And that would happen in the interview process. You'd be amazed how many times. And it was actually made the interview process very easy, because then it was done. It was done. Thank you for interviewing. We only hire people that are very passionate about our mission, that want to use our product. And if you don't have the interest to do that now or the dedication to do that now, then Tableau is just not the right place for you. So that was one example. Another example is we had another value that was we keep things simple. And so we could be in a meeting and someone would take a very long time to try to understand or to explain what their strategy was or to explain what the process would be. And we'd have to stop that meeting and say, remember, one of our values is we keep it simple. And this can't be simple for us internally. It can't be simple for our customers if you can't even articulate how it's going to work. Now, that happened with our pricing as well. People used to think it was so strange that Tableau just had this one price. And salespeople would come in and say, why don't you have additional add-ons? Because then you can add on and we can continue to get more incremental revenue. And we put all our features and they just, for a very long time, just went into this one bucket product. You got the product, you got all the features. Those were for two reasons. One, our mission was to help people see and understand data. So if there's a really cool feature, wouldn't you want all users to be able to see and understand data in that way? Instead of saying, no, only if you pay way more can you actually do that. Because that wasn't aligned with our mission. But also, that wouldn't have been simple to be like these product companies that have 7 pages of product SKUs. We kept it really simple. I think the last example I'll give there is with the values, it was part of our performance reviews, all of our performance reviews discussions, part of whether or not someone got an additional stock grant or whether they got a pay raise or whether they got promotion. Was what was your ability to demonstrate and show and live by the Tableau values? So sometimes there'd be people that would be very effective in actually getting their job done and getting their job results, but they would do it in a way where it wasn't respecting other people or it wasn't working as a team or it wasn't being fully honest or they weren't really illustrating that they were trying to further the mission. And all of those things meant that they wouldn't be furthering their career at the same level as someone that was maybe just shining on all of those things and maybe had some development areas on the experience level or what they needed to do. We really rewarded people that were living and breathing those values every day. And that's what I recommend to companies now. It's not just a Tableau thing. You can see that companies where they're really creating a phenomenal place to work and they're winning those rewards of great place to work. If you go back and you look, those are companies that are really clear about their mission and their values, and their employees are really passionate about it. And actually their customers get really passionate about it too, because they like being part of that whole ecosystem.
You touched on this other aspect in addition to values, the mission. And I've heard you talk before about the missionary sale. What does that mean, a missionary sale?
Adam, those are actually two different things, right? So one is I do talk a lot about the importance of the mission and the vision, and then you have a missionary sale. So you can have companies of all different stages and sizes that have very strong missions. If you look at some of the biggest companies in the world on the Fortune 10 or Fortune 100, they have very broad missions. They might not still be doing the missionary sale. So let's take those two separately. First, with regards to a mission is really the essence of why a company exists. Sometimes people have, you can break it up technically, and I teach this in my go-to-market strategy course. Vision and mission are slightly different. Vision is more of the North Star of where you're always going towards, but you'll never, ever get there. Whereas the mission brings it down to home a bit more. It still encompasses the why, but it articulates more what you're doing. Many companies will put those statements together into one statement at Tableau. Yet we had this vision that was helping people to answer their own questions and to empower people to be self-sufficient, to look at their own information and answer their own questions. But the mission that we always talked about was help people see and understand data, which makes it more tangible. So what you want to understand with this mission is this why, is this overall purpose of the company, of why you exist. Many companies are very good at articulating the what and the how. They aren't as good at articulating the why. And when you think about what you're selling, how you're selling, why customers are going to stay with you, it all has to tie back in to the overarching purpose, because that purpose is that North Star that keeps your employees working on this forever path. It lets your customers know not only what you're doing now, but where you're headed and what you're about. And it helps to inform and encompass everything that is, you know, how you're doing that mission together with your values. So that's the bigger picture. When you talk about the missionary sale, is really as a company is just getting going. So here in Seattle, we have tons of startups, lots of companies that are early stage, even companies when they're not public yet, or public companies, the largest public companies in the region or anywhere, where they end up launching a new product or a new division or a new geography, going into a new region, whatever it may be. And this is when missionary sales become much more important. Because when you're doing the missionary sale, you don't have the reputation necessarily to ride on. You don't have that customers already have you installed as a platform, and they already know your references, know everything of what you're about. So early days, whether it's just a new division and a new product of a bigger company or a bigger entity, or if you're just getting started, there's not tons to go on. And so you really have to sell and rely on this. Why does it even matter? Why should a company trust you and believe in you early days? When you just ask that question, a story that I like to tell that popped up is this story I call the printer story. This was really early days at Tableau. And it was 2005. So we basically, we'd get 100 questions and, or 100 objections, I like to call them. And the answer to why we were getting those objections, of 99 of those answers were, no, we don't do that. You have this objection, you can't figure it out because no, we don't do that. We were really early on. We didn't do very much. We didn't connect to most databases. We had very few features, but we were very firm on this mission of we help people see and understand data. And we were trying to empower people to answer their own questions and do it much more self-sufficiently, much faster, to save them time and make it much easier. That we were super clear on. But the product didn't do a ton, but it did that. It still made it easier. So early 2005, I had this prospect. The prospect was using a trial. He was loving how he was using Tableau. And he was towards the end of the trial. That was back in the days where we were selling a lot of the products just in that, those first 14 days. And he called me and said, hey, Kelly, I'm loving Tableau. I have this great visualization that I've created, and I want to show it to people. And I can't figure a couple things out. I'm hoping you can help me. And I said, sure, happy to help. We were on the phone. And he said, I have this visualization and I can't find the print button. Where's the print button? And I said, well, you can't find the print button because we don't have a print button. Can't print yet. Nowadays, people would say, well, why don't you just tell the person to print screen? But back then, people weren't really savvy with printing screens, and I didn't actually have any idea how to print a screen. I didn't even know that was a thing back then. So he couldn't print. So he said, let's find it. I don't have to print. I'll just export it to PDF. Like, where do I export the PDF? I said, oh, yeah, we don't have an export to PDF functionality, so you can't do that. So his third thing was, can I publish it somewhere on the internet? Can I push it out there? We didn't have everything SaaS back then. We were in the old school dinosaur ways. And I said, no, that's coming in 2007, we believe, but we don't have that now in 2005. And so he said, okay, now I have a little bit of a problem. Like, I've created this visualization. It's really meaningful, but how do I actually share it? I don't know how to share it. And I said, I just have a question. Where are the people that you want to share it with? And he said, they're actually right here in my office. I said, okay, so it's not like they're in a different city. He said, no, they're just down the hall. And I said, are you on a desktop or a laptop? And he said, I'm on a laptop. And I said, okay, super easy. Here's your solution. Undock your laptop, pick it up, walk down the hall, and you can share it that way. And first I heard some chuckles. And then he said, okay, here's my credit card. And he bought. And so I think the whole idea of that story is it's a little funny and it's dating ourselves back to when technology couldn't do so much. But it's really in this essence of he believed so much with this idea of helping people see and understand data, and that it was making him more efficient and able to work faster and easier, that he bought it anyway. And that is the essence of a missionary sale.
I love that. It's also hilarious, Kelly, to just think about like people asking about printing. So in that situation, what would a sales rep do that wasn't indoctrinated in the mission and the missionary sale? What would be the wrong way to handle that customer that might lead to them walking away or not being enrolled in Tableau's mission?
There are a few things with that. The wrong thing to have said in that situation is, no, we don't have print and we don't have PDF. Sorry, the answer is no. And stopping there, that would have been factually correct, but that's certainly not being good at doing missionary sales. But I think that there's a few things there. This comes back to really understanding the why. Now, many customers are not going to buy about the why. Like, many customers are going to, if you go back to Tableau, say we help people see and understand data, they have a problem. They need to create a report or they need to answer their question. They don't necessarily care what the mission is. But if you understand your mission and your why, that is what helps to really articulate the differentiated value propositions of your company and of your product. And this is where it really matters, because if you think back to that story with Tableau, it was less about all the different features and all the different things that we did. It was less about the how and the what. It was more that he had felt, even with the limited functionality that we had at the time, that using the product was helping him to work faster and get answers that he was not able to get himself with any of the other products out there. So our differentiated value propositions were about speed. They were about ease of use. They were about self-sufficiency. And we had a few others as well. But I could sell that. And salespeople knew how to sell that. They could come and tell us every other product that was out there that said they were analytics or business intelligence. And we knew. I knew with every fiber of my being, put us up against anything out there and Tableau could do it faster and easier. And so I had that belief, but that was really about what our differentiated values are. And what many salespeople do is they know the features and benefits of their product or service, But they can sell these features, but the features are the same features that every other competitor has. They're not differentiated in any way. They're not unique. They're not what's going to actually bring you to the forefront. And that is what salespeople need to know. So even if they're not indoctrinated in missionary sales, all salespeople need to know, what are your unique differentiators that make you better or make you great just because, but then also make you better from everyone else that's out there. That's the first. The second is just being able to think on your feet and being innovative and thoughtful. There's a lot of people, and this is what happens in sales. Everyone's always talking about having your sales playbook and having your talk track. That's important and makes us all much more efficient. But if you're just going to read from your playbook and not be able to think on your feet or be agile, or be nimble, that's what really helps salespeople. There's things coming at you all the time. You can't predict every single sentence and objection that anyone's ever going to say. You can predict a lot of those, and that'll help make you more efficient and more effective. But how do you think on your feet and be innovative and thoughtful and creative to know what to do? And a lot of that means you also have to be a really good listener, because salespeople are so ready to go pitch their wares and talk about why they're so great. They don't actually even know what the objections are. They're not listening enough to hear what is the customer or prospect asking, and how can I answer that in a way where I answer their question and I'm also highlighting what our differentiated values are.
Yeah, it's like, how would you script out into a playbook the printer scenario and be like, oh, if the customer says this and the team is in the same location, have them pick up their laptop. Like, that creativity and problem solving on your feet would be, I would think, very difficult to script out that kind of
idea. That might be giving me too much credit on my creativity and thinking on my feet. I think, you know, there's an element too of desperation early days. What do I need to do to get the sale? I think sometimes that some people might call it desperation, but you need to think, what do I need to do to be able to be authentic, answer the question, and do the right thing? I think other thing that sometimes salespeople do is, in a situation like that, they still want to win the business. They're feeling desperate, that then they promise something or they say that there's something that actually they can't deliver on. And going back to core values of a company, don't do that. That's, you might have a short-term win and that's a long-term disaster. So I think that also reflects how one of our core values was being honest. So just being direct and honest, we don't do that. If that is something you must have, then don't buy this, because we don't do it. And I think sometimes that level of honesty just gets you a lot of credibility with your prospects and customers too, because they appreciate that.
Love that. Yeah. Instead of promising the export to PDF feature and making things up, you can quickly move past that and focus on the things that you know where you can win. I want to go back to something you said, that a lot of companies are good at articulating the what and the how, but they aren't good at articulating the why. Maybe I'm being too pedantic here, but you said articulating the why. And I'm curious, why is articulating it important, or why is that? And maybe I'm overreading this, so feel free to correct me, but why is that where the rubber meets the road on this? And then I'm really curious what a good articulation of the why actually looks and feels like, because it seems easy to me for somebody to just read it back. And I'm assuming there's something deeper there, or something that comes out when people are trying to articulate it, or where it really counts. So yeah, I'm curious to hear a little more on that aspect.
Since I'm a storyteller at heart, I'll try to answer your question with this story. Since this new stage, when I've been teaching and operating as a director and advisor, I've probably sat down with over 100 CEOs of both public and private companies. And oftentimes I hear a CEO, especially at smaller companies or high growth companies, it changes a little bit once a company's public or much bigger. But oftentimes people will say, our best, like, the CEO is the best salesperson. the CEO can go and wow any prospecting customer, and then everyone wants to buy from that CEO. So what we don't understand is our CEO might not even have much sales experience. Like our CEO might be a product person or might be a serial entrepreneur or whatever it might be. But the CEO is not like day-to-day going and selling. So we go hire all these salespeople, but then the salespeople aren't as effective as the CEO. And why is that? And here's the thing. The CEO is so passionate about their mission and the reason that they exist and understand so well why they're different from everyone else out there. That's what motivated them to actually take all the risk and start the company in the first place. And so they can actually talk about it with such passion that it gets the prospect super excited, and they completely get it. That's what it is. They get it. Then you go have salespeople, and salespeople are selling the how and the what. They're selling all the features. We do this, we do that, we do this. We do these 27 things, and they're the same 27 things that swap the name out on the website. The other 10 players in the space do everything the same. And so they're not having that conviction as to why, how the company's doing it is doing it differently. So when I talk about articulating it, it means everyone might understand what it is theoretically, but then how do you actually explain it? So that's putting together this whole story of how do you talk about your mission, your values, your differentiated value proposition, and be able to articulate that in a way where you're explaining it to who your ideal customer, your ideal prospect is, in a way that they actually care, that they want to listen, that they want to be engaged. And the interesting thing is, oftentimes I'll go into a company and they'll say, we're having a problem. Like our sales productivity is off, and they want to talk about sales metrics or why their reps aren't hitting their quota or how we can work with sales readiness to come up with a different playbook. And I'm happy to help with all those. And maybe they all need work too. But oftentimes the first thing I'll say is sit down with a number of the different executives and say, tell me your story. Tell me what you're pitching. Tell me what your mission is. Tell me what your unique values are. And if I have 3 or 4 or 5 conversations and everyone's telling me something different, which happens, believe it or not, literally all the time, then that's the problem. You need to be able to fix it so there's a consistent story where people are consistently articulating the same message. Because if everyone in your company is telling a different message, it's probably because everyone believes they're running in a different direction. And if you put a whole bunch of people in a room and you tell everyone go, and everyone goes a different direction, surprised that you end up in different places.
That's so interesting how the symptom comes up and people think it's this operational thing, and then often drilling down, it's this question of alignment or mission. As you've been working with companies, is this a surprise to people? And was this surprising at Tableau that, like, when you were thinking about building out sales, you were thinking at this level and of kind of mission, vision, values, and driving back to that consistently?
Well, at Tableau, we, like many other people, in some ways were flying by the seat of our pants. For me, before Tableau, the largest team I had managed was 16 people. I had never been in enterprise software. I didn't know anything about business intelligence, except I had used Excel and was a poor Excel guru. You can't say poor Excel and guru in the same sentence, but I used Excel a lot very poorly. I didn't know anything about customer success. I hadn't gone and done geographic expansion. We were figuring these things out. And all we really had to know is we had a disruptive product. We were doing it in a disruptive way. And we needed to share with the world that there actually was a better approach. And so we did what we knew how to do. Like, why are we different? How do we go explain that?
It sounds like it was this very organic and iterative thing where you started with this strong mission and vision and values and strategy, and then it all rolled from there because that's what you knew and that's what you came together around was the mission. Is it possible to retrofit mission, these things, like mission backwards.
Well, it's much easier to do it from the beginning. And when companies aren't aligned, whether you're a new startup just getting started, whether you're in hyper growth, whether you're already public, whatever it is, I think you should ask yourself, hey, is everyone aligned on what we're doing and what our goals are? Not just operational goals. People say, oh, we want more market share. Oh, we want to hit our quotas this year. Okay, those are operational goals and KPIs, but that's not necessarily going to help you to achieve what you need to achieve. So you need to be thinking about, again, where are you headed? Where are you running to? I like to think of it like a map. If you're going, and in the days when it's not COVID, maybe we will be going somewhere outside our own little cities on these big global maps. But if there's a map and you pick where you want to go, there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can get there. There's different modes of transportation. There's different paths, but at least where you're headed and where you're going to end up. And then you can figure out and chart what your best path forward is. And you'll go somewhere, you know, now, and then in a different stage of the trip, you might say, hey, you know what? We want to take a detour. We want to go a different direction. Or now we actually have some different places that we want to see. So you're always going to be iterating. And each year or each time, you'll have some slightly different goals, but directionally where you're headed. And so it's important that we all directionally know where we're headed first. And then it makes it much easier. So if you don't know where that is, then it's worth having a conversation, drive alignment first, because the way to fix your lack of alignment is make sure that there's threading up on the top of where that alignment starts.
I like that you said that directionally part, because that made it feel a little less daunting to me, because then you don't have to figure out exactly how you're going to get from point A to point B, but make sure you're at least pointing one direction.
I think maybe, Adam, if you just put it this way, there's always a balance, right? There's always a balance between the long-term and the short-term. So some people might be listening to this conversation and say, it's so out there in the clouds. Like, we need to get things done today, this week, this month, this year, this quarter. And that's totally true. But there's a balance of short-term and long-term, right? And so we all need to get stuff done today. But the challenge is that companies that struggle because maybe they're thriving now, but then when they get to the next stage, they struggle and then they have to go re-architect everything, come up with new goals, come up with a different mission, go hire all new leaders that know how to scale to that next level who have done that before. That can be challenging because everyone's so short-term focused on short-term goals. What's going to happen then once you achieve X? Now you have to go plan Y. Well, if you're too focused long-term, then that's when companies get way ahead of their skis. They start saying, hey, you know what? We have $50 million in ARR, but we're going to be a public company and we're going to have over $1 billion. So we're going to go hire people that are going to help us then. We're going to go put all these processes in place. There's a long way between here and there. So it's good directionally to know where you're headed, to have alignment so everyone's agreed with where you're going, but then businesses are built one day at a time, step by step, block by block. And so then you need to always be focusing every day, what can I do today, right now, to move the needle on my business? What can I do today to help other of my coworkers and my employees be more successful? What can I do today, right now, to help my customers of today to be successful? And it's a balance. And I think the companies that focus too much on just the North Star are going to struggle because there's a long way between here and there. Most companies never get there. But if you focus too much on the here and now and the urgent fire drills that are coming, you may have lots of successes along the way, but then it'll be hard to have to re-architect every time you've achieved your goal.
I love that model of the balance, and the questions you're asking at both the high level and the day-to-day are super helpful. I appreciate your time, and I want to wrap this up with the supersonic six. So number one, how much coffee do you drink?
Oh, well, this is a funny story because I don't drink any caffeine.
Zero?
I have not had any caffeine for almost 19 years. And I actually have a fair amount of energy. And so some people say they'd be scared to hear how fast I can talk or what my energy level would be with caffeine. But it's the reason it's so funny is I do so many quote unquote coffees. I did back when we could leave the house. I do so many coffees and I don't drink any caffeine. So if you see me with one of those coffee cups, it has a hot chocolate or water or ice or something in it. So no caffeine for me.
Number two, what's one Seattle company that you're following or studying right now?
We've talked a lot about mission and values. So one company I like following is Outreach, because I think they're doing a really great job at creating a whole ecosystem where really people are passionate not only about the product, but they want to be part of it. Like, they have a really cool culture vibe going where I think that is illustrating a lot of what's important to me.
Number three, who's one Seattle person that you're following or learning from right now?
There's so many who I'm learning from. A few that come top of mind are some of the people that I've met through the Women in Board Network. So I come up with a long list of names, maybe two that just come to mind right now who have been helping to mentor me are Phyllis Campbell and Patty Bedient, who are both highly decorated board directors and very active in the business community here, who are giving a lot back to help the next generation of female directors behind them and doing it in a way where it's not only added to the boardroom, but really furthering diversity efforts, diversity of thought, and doing it in a very culturally additive type of way.
Number four, what's the one thing that Seattle needs to improve as a startup hub?
It's awareness. It's awareness of what we're doing. I teach go-to-market. And the interesting thing about Seattle, which aligns with what a lot of companies' problems are, so many companies have this amazing product or amazing service. And the challenge is people aren't buying it because they don't even know the company exists. And I think we have a bit of that challenge in Seattle. There's so much talent here. And there's so much amazing technology and they're incredible people and just exceptional companies. And the rest of the world just does not know. So what are we doing here in Seattle to bring more investors, to bring more venture money, to let people know that there's amazing companies here, that we should be hiring employees from all around the globe to come be here? And so we really need to up the level of just the awareness of all that's happening in Seattle.
Number five, what's one piece of advice you'd give your 20-year-old self?
I would go back to this whole relationship piece. I think that I was always just running, and I'm probably that way now too, but always running. It's like that rat race or on the hamster wheel of just whatever you achieve, you want to go next. And I was super driven and always running and racing to the next thing and taking some time to just appreciate the people that you meet along the way and those relationships that you're forging. Because we all know now, with as you get older and wiser, that it's the relationships and the people that matter. And now I have time in my life and my career that I can go back and nurture all these relationships that I've done along the way. But I was railroading through those a lot for a number of years. And I think it's important to just be nurturing and taking care of all of those relationships, because that's what's going to make you really happy. It's not just all the achievements or goals that you accomplish, but it is those meaningful relationships.
Number six, last one. What call to action do you have for this community? Are there any of your companies that you would like them to go check out, or any causes that you'd like people to support or take a look at? Anything that you'd like this audience to go do?
There are a whole bunch of places that I could go with that. I'm very active now in all this effort about women on boards and women in leadership and diversity of thought. And it's a very top of mind topic right now. And oftentimes people look and say, hey, I wish it could be better. And I think we all need to look at ourselves and say, what can we individually do to help the situation? And so here are some tangible things you can do. Even if you're not in a position where if you're hiring people, or if you're on a board or you're an executive at a company, I think that there's a lot of things that you can do just around hiring practices and making sure you're looking at different candidates. But there's many of us that we might not be in that kind of a situation where we're the ones making the rules, but we can still have a huge impact. Ways that we can do that is we can put people's names up. We can suggest people to work at our company or to work at other companies. We can be a connector, because a lot of it has to do, unfortunately, with who people suggest people they know. So be a connector to other people who are really good and have promise. Offer to mentor someone or help someone. And also just be there to listen and help support and promote people that are around you. Because I think in order to further progress in this area, we're all going to have to take an action. And those little actions add up to a lot.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you again for your time today. This has been a great conversation and I really appreciate it.
Adam, it's been very fun. Thank you for having me.
Hey, it's Adam again. Quick note before you go. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the show as much as I am enjoying making it. If you do like it, please leave a rating or a review. That would help other people find it in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you have any feedback, send me an email, adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com. No underscores, no periods, just adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com.